Hi, and welcome to the Cutaneous Connection, a podcast from the staff at Dermatology Times, aiming to provide you with the latest news in dermatology, exclusive interviews with leading experts, and a glimpse at what goes on behind the scenes of clinical trials, research, and innovation. In today's episode, we sat down with Doris Day, a board-certified dermatologist in New York City who focuses on longevity aesthetics. She's been in practice for over 25 years and is thrilled to be leading this new conversation on women in menopause and perimenopause. In this episode, she discusses the most common cutaneous concerns among menopausal women. She also shares insights from Galderma's recent menopause survey and explores how dermatologists can thoughtfully incorporate conversations about hormonal health into aesthetic consultations.
I'm Doris Day. I'm a board certified dermatologist in New York City, and my focus is longevity aesthetics. I said I've been in practice for over 25 years, and I'm really excited about this whole new conversation around women in perimenopause and menopause, because it really taps into the whole longevity space in a way that I think is way more impactful than the way we looked at it before, of just chasing what we saw instead of treating the source.
In clinic, what are the most common skin changes dermatologists are seeing in women experiencing menopause? Why do you think this patient population is experiencing such a gap in knowledge?
The age range that commonly comes in asking for cosmetic treatment with are women starting in their late 30s, early 40s and up, when they think about it as aging. So when younger patients come in, they're not thinking of it because of aging so much. They're thinking of it as making a statement. So they may want bigger lips or bigger cheeks or a smoother forehead, but it's not because they think they look old. It's because they want a look. When women come in their upper 30s and up to their early 40s and up, what they're really seeing and feeling are signs of aging that they want to hold back and sometimes even reverse, depending on how far along they are. So many times women will come in their early to mid 40s and they'll say, one day my skin just fell apart. Or they'll say, I'm breaking out like I never used to, or I'm dry and itchy, or my hair is starting to thin. All of these changes that unto themselves are fixable. But when you start asking, have you noticed a change in your period that it's lighter or heavier than usual, or the cycle's off a little bit? Have you noticed that you're more irritable than you were, or your sleep isn't the same, or you're having some, you wonder if you're hot or if everyone else is hot? And you start putting it together with like joint aches and all these other non-specific symptoms, you realize that these women are in perimenopause. And if you're really going to help them, you're going to help them understand that this is a new phase of life that needs to be addressed both medically and aesthetically. And unless we address it in both ways, we're really not going to serve them well. So I always find that it's interesting how I'm often the one that tells my patients, you're in perimenopause, and I'm going to help you aesthetically, and I'm going to connect you with colleagues who can also address it medically so that these can be the best and most beautiful years of your life. And they're often relieved because they feel like they're not crazy. What they're feeling is real. What they're seeing is real. And there are things that they can do about it.
What were the key findings and statistics from Galderma's menopause survey that was presented at this year's IMCAS World Congress?
Nearly half the women in the survey said they'd consider anti-wrinkle treatments. That was about 47% to help manage those changes, followed by hyaluronic acid fillers, which was about 40%, and skin quality treatments at 39%, and biostimulators only at 30%. But today, most women use those aesthetics primarily as a treatment rather than as prevention. Only 26% use it as prevention, mostly because they only learn about menopause's impact on the skin once they've already experienced symptoms. So more than 60% of these women said they would have acted differently if they had understood those changes earlier. And that's one of the things that I talk about with my younger patients, is helping them to understand the changes that are coming, not to make them feel bad or to tell them like it's all doom and gloom. It's really to give them hope and help them understand that there are things that they can do that are going to preserve and enhance their beauty as they age. And it's really not about trying to look 20 when you're 40 or 60, because your bone structure is changing. It's about understanding the balance that happens, it's about understanding the balance that is beauty with age. I think beauty becomes more beautiful with age. It's a different beauty. There's a beauty of youth that is partly genetic, partly hormonal, partly the idea of fertility. And as you get older and the changes that have happened from a life well lived add a sense of beauty that you couldn't have at 20 because you haven't survived the things you've survived to get to your 50s and 60s and 70s. And whether your life was all good or a combination of good and bad, as it is for most people, just having lived through it and getting to the other side adds a layer of beauty that is ethereal. And when I add my aesthetics to it with the balance of the fillers, whether it's a biostimulator or a combination of biostimulator and hyaluronic acid, and sometimes devices and neuromodulators as well, like Dysport, I find that what you actually see is the beauty of a life well lived that's in balance. And women are really happy because they look just like themselves, but they can see their beauty. And that's something that we have to teach them sometimes to recognize their beauty and not chase youth. And they're two completely different things. I want you to understand what I tell my daughter, Marie. It's older is better. There is something about getting older that is really truly happy. If you exercise and have a good lifestyle and you eat well and you get enough sleep and you manage your hormones and you do your preventive aesthetics and the treatments that are going to help keep you in balance, you realize that there's a certain happiness that comes with the idea that you've raised your children, you've had your career, you're still growing, but you've already accomplished. That feels really good. And that you can just enjoy the ride from here on, but you have so much ride left in you.
How can dermatologists better integrate hormonal health into the standard aesthetic consultation without overstepping into gynecology?
I believe that every physician needs to understand menopause care, menopause therapy, and should even be able to prescribe it. Unfortunately, gynecologists are often unwilling to do it. And I find that it's hard, even in an area like New York, where we have so many physicians and so many gynecologists, that I have a hard time finding ones that are willing to actually do menopause hormone therapy. So I've actually taken courses to learn how to do it, and I often get my patients started. I don't think we're overstepping by doing hormone therapy for our patients, as long as we know how to manage it. And we can consult with colleagues who are specialists when needed. But basic menopause hormone therapy is not complicated. And I think every doctor should know how to do it. When it comes to long-term management, I think, or for people who have certain risk factors or other medical conditions, you do need specialists. And I work with a multidisciplinary team, whether it's primary care doctors, functional medicine doctors, or OBGYNs. And that's important. But basic care should be able to be done by every physician. And as a medical doctor, we should understand hormones, how to read them. I know so many physicians who happily prescribe hormonal contraceptives for patients, which is much higher dose of hormones than in a hormonal contracept than in a menopause hormone therapy. So we do systemic treatments all the time. And menopause has signs and symptoms in the skin. So I'm treating their menopause or perimenopause with a systemic treatment because of what I see in the skin. And it is systemic. So we use a lot of systemic drugs to treat what we see as skin issues. And because menopause and perimenopause are so multi-organ affecting, I don't think that it's only one type of doctor that should be able to prescribe it. The part that I can do that those doctors can't do is I can manage the skin components and the aesthetics. So I know because I've lived through it myself, that menopause hormone therapy doesn't stop skin aging entirely, which is really a bummer. You still have to address the skin directly. That means proper sun protection. That means getting people on a calendar of both preventative and treatment to help keep them looking the way that they want over time. And it's a very fine line. That's why I think the idea of having a biostimulator plus a hyaluronic acid plus a neuromodulator, that combination allows you to reach your goal of helping maintain balance, maintain facial structure without having somebody look like they've had a procedure done or fillers in their face. So the patients are the happiest are the ones who understand that it's a combination of treatments, that there isn't one thing that's going to fix everything. But if you think about it, you can lose up to 30% of your collagen in the first 5 years post-menopause. So what I do has to be a balance of systemic plus aesthetic treatments in order to help make the ultimate difference in my patients. I want to maintain their collagen, preserve what I can, regrow what I can, maintain their facial contours, and help them have the best skin quality they can. So I also have skincare in there as well. Now, a lot of people don't realize, like they'll bring in pictures from when they were younger and they'll say they had fuller cheeks, but there is some acceptance that comes with aging as well, that you have to understand that your bone structure is different, your eyes are going to sit different. And if you try to maintain the fullness that you had in your 20s and sometimes into your 30s, your eyes are going to look smaller and you'll look off balance. So you need somebody who can explain to you your anatomy, how your face is changing, and how to keep that balance that's going to help you look your best, but it's not going to be replacing all the volume that you think you've lost over the years from when you were in your 20s.
How should clinicians address these aesthetic concerns in a way that prioritizes a patient's overall psychological well-being?
One of the first things I do is I have patients look in the mirror and we talk about their best features. So they want to dive in and tell me what they don't like and what they want to fix. But I will then turn it around and start with their beautiful eyes or their brow positioning or their bone structure or even the way their hair frames their face. So I try to focus on what they love about how they look, not what they want to change. And I tell them, I want you to go from beautiful to more beautiful, not flawed to less flawed. And if all you see are flaws, then no matter what I fix, you'll find more flaws. But if you can see your beauty and say, okay, this bothers me, but I have the most beautiful eye color and my eyes are transcendent, then or my eyes really stand out. And you can see that. Everybody else may tell you, but can you see that? So I try to teach them to see their beauties. And then I tell them, I want you to see your beauty, and then we'll celebrate and enhance it. And I will tell you that patients really appreciate that, and it does help. It does help them learn to see their beauty, and it makes me really happy to watch them turn that page of going from like criticizing to actually recognizing what they have that's special.
How will the growing use of GLP-1s further impact treatment in this particular patient population?
I would say a lot of times what I do in my patients, especially now with menopause hormone therapy, they're also adding in GLP-1s into their regimen. One thing I've been having them do is as soon as they start the GLP-1, I bring them in, we talk about the importance of exercise and nutrition and getting enough protein and drinking enough water because you do get dry. But then I start them on a program where we start doing Sculptra right away to make sure that as they lose overall volume, they don't also lose it in their face because I want them to stay motivated to stay on that path towards being more fit and healthy, but it often comes off in the face first. So I get them in a program of doing Sculptra 3 to 4 times at 6 week intervals. And then I combine it with hyaluronic acid to help with contouring and specific areas like around the mouth to help soften. So I might do Sculptra in the whole face and then add Restylane, refine or define or contour along the jawline for extra definition of that area. And all women with age, our chin starts to recede. And I focus a lot on the balance of the mid, lower, and upper face. So that balance of adding back and helping with skin quality, with general skin volume without looking overfilled is really important. And if you're on a GLP-1, it's important to see your dermatologist before you even start, and then as you're losing weight, so that we can help maintain your facial balance so that you always like what you see when you look in the mirror, and that you can stay on that path of health and well-being without feeling like you have to pay the price by looking gaunt.
Like this podcast, have suggestions, or want to participate in future episodes? Contact our team at dtheditor@mmhgroup.com. For more Dermatology Times content, from articles to videos and podcasts, visit www.dermatologytimes.com.